We're talking about the new world of families, coping with blended families, whether you're in one, around one, related to one, or whatever. Want to just talk a little bit about the dynamics of what are usually called step families. It's kind of hard to find a good name for these mixtures of people. Blended family doesn't really work because, as a lot of people who are in them will tell you, they don't really blend. It's sort of like, trying to stir up carrots and celery. It doesn't work very hard.
I think the worst one I heard for it is transgenic families.
Wouldn't want to make me want to be in one. I don't know what a transgenic family would be, but it sounds dangerous.
I wonder if I should leave those in.
Oh, yeah.
Would you like to come in today?
We thought this was Crafts.
No.
Crafts is downstairs.
Crafts is downstairs.
Crafts is walking with you.
And you blended?
Yes.
Yes.
I played.
It's real easy to confuse blended families and first-time nuclear families and to open the door again.
Yeah, one out of two.
Yeah. I was raised on a farm, and there was a story went around about a farmer down the road that had one of his city slicker nephews come to visit, and he wanted to have him do a little work, and so he sent him out to milk the cow, and he told him how to do it, and just go out and Bossy's real tame. She'll just come in and you feed her some grain, and just milk her. It takes a few minutes and bring the milk back, and the nephew was he was pretty sure that he could do it. He was a pretty confident kid, and he went out and came back about 15 minutes later, just all beat up. Just bleeding and scraped up and torn clothes. And he said, "Well, what happened?" He said, "Well, that cow of yours is real mean." And the farmer said, "Bossy is mean? Bossy isn't mean. What do you mean?" He says, "Well, just beat me up." And he said, "Well, you must have done something wrong." He said, I don't know, but what's that ring in her nose for anyway?" Cows and bulls look similar, but if you treat them the same, you'll get yourself in trouble. Blended families and first-time nuclear families look similar, but there are some characteristics and dynamics within blended families that make them unique and make them totally different, just a totally different animal from a first-time nuclear family. One of the writers in blended family literature, Elizabeth Einstein, relates this comment in one of her first books. She says, "We spent our wedding night in a military terminal waiting to catch a free hop to Hawaii to honeymoon at the grand old Pink Hotel on Waikiki Beach. After two hectic months of house hunting, sorting, moving, and planning, we look forward to 10 days of sun and sand." 2 days later, Walter's father died, and we had to fly home. 1 week after the funeral, my new husband left for a 10-day business trip. The day after he left, the sitter called me at work to say the garage was flooded and water was pouring from the roof. While building a fort in the rafters, the children had driven a spike into the main water pipe. Kurt had cut his foot. The same week, I discovered some rings missing, and after the police questioned the sitter, she quit. Brenda, my 10-year-old stepdaughter, had gouged her leg while bicycling. When I took her to the hospital for stitches, they asked me for a medical history, which I did not have, and a signature from a parent, which they informed me I was not. Welcome to the world of step family living. Step families are a kind of burgeoning phenomena on the American scene. Researchers indicate that a young person of the 1990s has a better than 50% chance of living in a step family at some time. And yet, step families are stressed families. They experience a higher divorce rate than first-time families. The chance of divorce for a first-time marriage is a little more than 50%. It's hard to get accurate statistics on step or blended families, but they figure that the percentage there is somewhere between 60 and 65% of second marriages with children fail. Most of these fail within the first 4 years. And it's mostly because of the real different characteristics of blended families. Now, while I talk here, feel free to interrupt me, ask questions, make comments. Let's make this as much discussion as possible.
Now, is there much difference between the family where a person marries a widow or a widower, and the person who marries a divorced person?
Well, one of the myths about to blended family living is that when there's a death, that it's easier to form a new family because that ex isn't sitting out there in the wings somewhere to muddy up the waters. But that's generally not true, because what happens is that while there may not be an ex-spouse or other biological parent out there to come in and actively interfere, children have a habit of idealizing a dead parent to the extent that the step-parent can never live up or match, and so in some ways remarriage after death is harder because it's going to be a long time before the kids understand that their image of the dead parent is really an idealization.
Well, that happened in our family. Our second son married a widow with two children. One was two when the father died. And that little girl just had her father idolized. And when our son came into the family, my father wouldn't do that, or my father wouldn't do this, mm-hmm. And it's been very difficult. The son, however, was very accepting of our son, took his name, and everything went fine. But that daughter, to this day, has an idea what her father would have been, and our son Steve is not that.
Is so. Not that, mm-hmm. and he'll never be able to win.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right. He finally realized that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of the things that we don't understand about remarriage, as adults, when we go into remarriage, it's generally after some kind of loss, some kind of brokenness in life, and to have found somebody new to love is something to celebrate and to give thanks for, and the adults tend to be celebrating and in love. And what's very often missed is that for the children, remarriage is usually not a happy event. Because what it represents is yet another loss, in the series. If there was a death that broke up the family in the first place, they had to deal with the grief of death. If there was divorce, then the whole grief of family breaking up and the tension and stress of those changes. Then typically they will live in a single parent situation where relationships change. Very often what happens in the single parent situation is that a process of what's called spousification happens. The children in, especially if they're opposite sex children, take on some of the roles of the absent biological parent, and this is, the boy becomes the little man of the house, or even if the adult in the house tries to guard against this, kids will almost by osmosis at times take on these additional roles. And often develop a kind of intimacy with the single parent that isn't there in the regular married family. Then when this new person comes in and remarriage occurs, that represents loss to them because they lose that special intimacy that they've had with their single parent. That's one of the things that we need to keep in mind, when we look at blended families and look at forming blended families, is that they're born of a loss. We usually call them step families, and that very word comes from the German. It comes from Stilp, old German, meaning death. Families formed out of death. In older times, it was real common for women to die in childbirth. Man would then go out and marry, a new wife, hand her over the care of his, in some of our genealogy, what was it, 13 kids in one situation?
Then she had four of her own.
Yeah, then she had four of her own.
They all died within 2 or 3 years, except for one.
That phenomena has changed, shifted quite a bit in the last 30 or 40 years. Now most step families are formed after divorce rather than death. But the original name got its start from death. They're families born of loss. number of things that put in incredible stresses on. Before I talk about that, let me spin off of this notion of families born of loss. In mythological literature, there's a lot of stuff about evil stepmothers. Anybody familiar with the evil stepmother myth?
Cinderella.
Cinderella is the classic.
Right.
Snow White had a stepmother.
Hansel and Gretel
had an evil stepmother. It's the picture of the witchy.
And then did David Copperfield have the evil stepfather?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But step relations, haven't gotten real good press. But if you would just put yourself in the shoes of a woman, young, 20, 21, bright-eyed, marries a man 10 years older. He has 8 kids. What happens with her is she immediately gets left with those kids to be the nurturer, to be the caretaker, to be the one who raises them while the man goes off to work. She's put in charge of people that she has had no responsibility for. She doesn't know them from anybody. And now she is supposed to mother them. Perfect formula for resentment, frustration, animosity. Good reason that the myth of the evil stepmother developed came from having unrealistic expectations, I think, of human beings. One of the myths of step family living is that adults very often have is they come together, they fall in love, they look at their kids, they love their kids. How could anybody not love their kids? My daughter is a beautiful, wonderful child, and how could anybody not love my daughter? Ask her stepmother. How could anybody, not love her wonderful son and daughter? As parents, we have grown up with these people and have developed a relationship. Tends to be an assumption that since we love, that love will happen. And that it will just happen instantly. They'll walk through the door and it will take place. That puts a lot of tension and stress on the family situation. Just some of the things that put stress.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
First to me, Bach had a half dozen kids before he married one who came in 12 more, whatever. So she ended up with 20. Or go to Sound of Music. If the woman falls in love with the kids first, that might be a different thing for, but if it precedes the other, is there a difference that you anticipate there? In other words, when the man or the woman falls in love with his spouse, the children are out there, but if there's if a fondness develops before that fondness develops for the spouse, is there any differentiation observable there?
It could, but I wouldn't assume that it would guarantee. Doing weddings, I have numerous times encountered situations where the prospective step-parent had taken great cares to try and develop a good relationship with the children. And by all appearances, it appeared that had happened. But then once the wedding happened and once they all moved into the house, it was like some chemistry happened that it was tension, animosity.
I don't push this too far.
Yeah.
I was just thinking more of a case where a lot of men, at least in previous generations, married the housekeeper who was hired to take care of the house and the children, and there wasn't any relationship, but after a while it developed. And of course that's almost passé now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very likely situation.
Well, there's probably an element of validity there in because in the research that I've done, it appears that step parents who take time to after the marriage to establish an affectionate bond with the child, who develops some kind of relationship, some kind of friendship, before they do any discipline, that those situations tend to have better luck than or better response than those situations where the person comes in and immediately tries to be an authority figure,
which is where the problem was happening in the past, because the man would go to work and the woman would have to raise these kids and had to step in as an authority figure.
But had no natural authority with them.
Right, and that's where that clash, and oftentimes the man, if it was a reverse situation, the man was the guy that came home and wrestled on the carpet with him but didn't.
Yeah, Irma Bombeck, wish I had it here, has a wonderful parody on Cinderella's stepmother, talking about stepmothers who got bad press, and does this whole wonderful thing about Cinderella's stepmother, what was her name, Buffy Holtzinger, who married this man who brought Cinderella, and then he left to go find himself, and left her with this snotty, unresponsive, resentful daughter. It sort of, turns the story a around to give the stepmother some good press. But just some of the kinds of things that cause stress in a step family. Talk about the myth of instant love. That's one. Another is that in the remarried family, there often tend to be incongruent life cycles. In first-time families, there is a predictable cycle. The couple comes together, they marry, they develop their relationship for a bit, they have a child, then as that child grows, gets older, they develop a parenting style and sort of work it out as the child grows. The child gets older, you know, starts breaking away, becomes a teenager, and you know, by the time the child is a teenager, the couple relationship is very solid, and the couple is into the later stages of their relationship. Remarried family comes together. The couple is in a cycle where they need to be forming family, forming relationship. You have teenagers, you know, they might be in a process where they're trying to get out of the whole thing, breaking away from family, developing their own identity, learning who they are. So, you know, the children can be going, moving out, while the adults are trying to develop this new identity. Preconceived notions of family develop a remarried family, and you walk in, and there, you know, there are notions as to how to fold the towels. You know, do you fold them lengthways and then halfways, or do you fold them halfways and then lengthways? Just a little thing. Is dinner a time when everybody sits down and it's the family time together, or is dinner sort of catch as catch can, you know, grab and run and eat, and eat standing up? Different families develop different patterns, and when you merge these, they come into conflict, and you know, tension happens. You know, never did this way before. Another one of the tensions is different parenting styles. If you have a complex blended family where both parents bring children in to it, each of those parents will have developed their own parenting style, and you know, you get different rules. You know, what is acceptable? What level of noise in the house is acceptable? What level of interaction in conflict is acceptable? Is it do what I say, or do you reason things out, or you know, how do you handle it? Different parenting styles, and with the blended family, when the couple walks through the door, they need to have that parenting style developed and in place. With the first time family, I mean, they have years, or at least 9 months usually, you know, to think about it some, and even if they have 9 months, then what they have is an infant, and they can grow their discipline and relating style as they go. With the remarried family, have to have it in place when you walk through the door.
You have to have it in place?
Well, you're expected to have it in.
Nobody
does. Yeah, but nobody does.
But I think the point is you try as much as possible to negotiate and articulate so that false assumptions aren't there to mess up your expectations.
Well, that would assume that you even think you need to do it. I mean, in all the different classes we've taught, any couple that's in our class that's not married, that they're engaged, has no idea, and they seem incredulous that the rest of the people in the room have these particular problems, because it's just not going to happen to them. So, no matter how well educated the couple is, they don't believe. Well, that's good to know, but it's for somebody else.
I won't have tension in my step family because I can overcome it. I mean, I'll just love these kids so much that they'll just respond. And what happens? They love. love these kids so much, and the kid feels guilty. Because they have another biological parent who lives down the street or in the next town, who they see every Tuesday night or every weekend, and they don't know how to work out being in love with their parent and liking this new guy on the block. I mean, is it being disloyal to their parent to like this new guy? And they think that they can't love both a stepdad and a real dad, or both a stepmom and a real mom. And part of the tragedy is that oftentimes you have the other biological parent out there who, if they aren't remarried, will be feeling a bit insecure and a bit jealous and a bit threatened. And maybe not overtly planting these kinds of ideas, but covertly.
Sometimes
real plainly. Makes the development of the blended family an uphill kind of battle that takes time. The sociologists that have researched the processes of blended family development have pointed out that with families that are really working well, moving fast, handling the process as well, that it takes at least 4 or 5 years for family integration to happen. It's not a matter of weeks or even months, but it is a matter of years to get that family process really, really working. Other researchers have suggested that it takes about as many years as the child is old for the step-parent and step-child to develop a good relationship. So if the stepchild is 7 or 8 years old, it might be by the time they're 15 or 16 before a really solid, good relationship is developed. This isn't always the case. Sometimes there are really fast situations where the children are really open to new people, and all of the factors just fit together, and it's like magic. And when that happens, all you can do is give thanks for it and hold your breath that it doesn't all fall apart. How many people here have had direct experience with step families? Okay. Okay, with the children. That's one of the places where we don't really understand. Again, some of the pain that can come in divorce and remarriage. We think that it just affects the children and the adults involved, but we forget that very often grandparents can also be really adversely involved and lose any access at times to their grandchildren, which can be very painful. Mm. And her. What kind of situations do we have here?
My husband's two boys were raised in Central America, and he would go down yearly and visit and so on. And after we married, my daughter was born. And we brought her down when she was 7 months, when she was 4, introduced her to family, brothers, when she was 13. So we tried to nurture this you know, you are a family, even though you're at no point living together. Robert Jr. married, he and his wife came to the States and moved in with us. My daughter was 14. We started, maybe inappropriately right away, let's see what you have that you can share. And big fights about the use of a bicycle. It wasn't about the big things, but they would pick some sort of strange to us ground. And it was a big controversy, big brouhaha.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's about 5 years later, and seems to be real good bonding, real recognition of how they're the same and how they're different. And my daughter is very close to her sister-in-law. Not so close to her brother, but they don't have that much in common. But it seems to be off and worked itself out. But I was wondering, is there a critical time? Is there an age where it's more difficult to do this, the blending of two families?
My sense is that it tends to be more difficult with teenagers, I'd say, you know, probably from 10 to 16-year-olds. Again, there, you know, that's just a gut sense. There's no hard research on it. One of the hard things about looking at blended families is that there are so many variables about families that it's hard to do research. You know, given the differences in ages and sexes of that children can be, and the different makeups of families, whether the wife has children, the husband doesn't, or the husband has children, the wife doesn't, whether they're living there all the time or only part time, you know, a lot of different variables. Okay, what are some other situations here?
Well, mine is just right at the beginning. My father just remarried less than a month ago, so that's where we are.
Okay.
And she has no children, so.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, I have my brother married a widow with two children, and their father had died when the children were young, and then Bridget died about a year ago. So, and when they were married, they worked through adoption. So, John became their legal parent, and then Bridget died. So now they're just with John. That's a little odd, but Bridget was really open person, worked real hard at that, so they have a pretty good relationship.
How about the grandparents? Is there some ownership from the previous grandparents?
Oh, a lot.
I mean, you know, from the one?
A lot, yeah. So they have six grandparents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They just count my parents' grandparents. And then I'm now in a relationship with a woman who has four kids. And what I'm becoming aware of is how, or it's a new way of kind of watching, and I've watched families in the church, I'm a pastor, the families I work with in church, and how many times when divorce is there, that almost is, there was a lot of tension and chaos in the family already. So you're already working with children that are feeling loved and unloved and attachments, strange attachments to parents. And
mm-hmm.
Because I still, like, when I work, when I act instinctively, it's from my family situation, when my parents are together in a strong relationship. And there was plenty of chaos when we were teenagers in that situation. And I just have to realize all these other families just added on. So,
if I can just add a complication to your situation, we have that too, where the deceased husband has parents who were very interested, but both those parents have been divorced, and they now are remarried, so they picked up, so they got eight grandkids.
You're getting into, one of the, things that makes it real hard for kids. You know, if you got, John and Mary here, and they got three kids, and then they get divorced, and they each remarry, and there's maybe a kid here, and a couple kids here, and got grandparents here, and, you know, a lot of grandparents here. So you want to, three, four. After John and Mary have divorced, if they have three kids, they each marry somebody else with a kid. Counting all of the grandparents. Okay, in the first situation with the primary nuclear family, there are 236 possible different sets of interactions that can happen with that combination of people. Any guess how many possible combinations there are in the expanded constellation of the family? Just any wild guesses. Over 8 million. You know, and then we wonder why kids can't quite figure it out. In the primary nuclear family, there are role models and names for all of the relationships. You know who your aunt is. You know who your uncle is, or your cousin, or your grandparent. At one point, my daughter, Barb's son and daughter, were going over to her ex-husband's house because his parents were coming into town. And my daughter, Ruth, wasn't quite sure if his parents were somehow related. Am I going to get a present from them too? No.
So what do you recommend as far as, I'm divorced and I've remarried, but I married a man who has never been married, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of my biological family, I mean with my husband and my three children. I now have a grandson, and so, is it confusing, would it be confusing for my grandson to have me as the biological grandma and my new husband be a grandpa also? Or is it better to keep the biological grandparents separate and the new spouses be just people? or should that grandchild, you know, say, you know, Grandma Nancy or Grandpa Tom or Grandpa Tom and so forth.
My sense is that just call them, you know, Grandpa Nancy and Grandpa Tom. That's pretty much what our kids do. Not keeping track of the step relationships.
So it's okay just to, you know, they just will. My grandson will just know that he's got more sets of grandparents.
They love it on birthdays and Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There are definitely advantages.
I think the situation's different, but as a, my father was in the Navy, so we moved around a lot, and we weren't near, and my mom's parents both died when I was real little, so I didn't know them. But my mom and dad's habit was to find adults in the church or through different connections. So I didn't know until I was 10 or 12 that Granny Joe and Grandpa Carlton weren't related in any way. And that Uncle Tim and we knew his family all over the place. And I didn't know.
And that was okay with you?
I didn't know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, just that's, they were older people who cared about us and they were fun to have around and around. And then it was later that I guess we asked or got that figured out, but that worked for us.
And we keep the ex-spouse's parents separated out of the picture in a way by asking them to please send the gifts to the other houses, because it would be unfair to his daughter if
my ex's parents sent presents to my kids at my house. So do it at their house, his house, where she, his daughter will never go and there will never be jealousy. And that separates out any potential problems. And we've asked, if anybody sends a gift to our house, then they need to send it to all three of them. We've made that really clear to anybody, because it's not fair to the, they just don't understand. And it's worked really well.
That's more of a question of working out individual boundaries and, you know, in your own particular situation. How old are your children?
My children? Yeah. 22, 23, 20, almost 26.
Okay. So they're all a
yeah.
adult. And
mm-hmm.
One of the dynamics that is often seen with younger children is that even after the remarriage, they will fantasize about the biological parents getting back together. That is a fantasy that dies real hard, you know, because that's the way that they want it. They want both of the people that they love to be in the same house. And, you know, that can cause stresses at a time.
I would really like to hear, you know, you started something. You care to comment at all? What you anticipate or what you see or experience now?
Well, just in saying, you know, about the grandma and grandpa thing, kind of thing, that when I have kids, that all of us have decided that my dad's wife will be Linda, as she is to us. That, you know, it's his wife, but not necessarily my mother. I mean, she didn't raise me in any way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I think that's a really individual thing. I mean, for a kid, I mean, they won't really know the difference.
Are you denying her some dignity? Because she is an elder of another generation to call her by first name, whereas an aunt or something?
I don't think so.
Should she have a voice in that?
You mean ask what she would like to be called?
Like what she would like to be called?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't spoken with her about it, but my feeling is that's where she's at. Also, my fiance, as I'm engaged, calls his grandparents by first name, and so I don't think that, you know, I don't, but I don't know how that would work. But I don't think that's denying her any dignity. I mean, she's my aunt, not by very many years, so, you know, I don't really...
I guess I'm pleading as a grandparent.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, you know, their grandchildren, Carol called their grandparents mm-hmm. by the first name, and I think it's a good courtesy to ask.
Where she's at.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly ask.
I'd like to share what happened with us. I mentioned the one boy who came over with his wife and stayed with us. Subsequently, the other boy came over, and he was at an age where as soon as he came, he wanted to start working. And so my sister-in-law, she and her husband had a carpentry shop, and so we were quite a ways away, and so we said, well, why don't you go over and stay with your cousins and work in the shop, and you can come back and visit with us on weekends and so on. Well, because he was staying with my nieces and nephews, who called me Aunt Margaret, pretty soon he was calling me Aunt Margaret. So I've got one son who calls me Mommy, who lived with us with his wife, and another one who calls me Aunt Margaret. Now, the couple who called me Mommy, I'm Grandma. I mean, there was just no discussion. It was just that. I'm waiting to see what happens with the other son to whom I'm Aunt Margaret. And I fully expect if I'm Aunt Margaret to him, I won't be Grandma to his kids. So I do think it's something that evolves. And I think it's something that the child feels comfortable with, and it comes from that down to the grandchildren.
Yeah.
That is also very much an issue, this naming thing, with the step-parent and the step-child. It's generally a mistake to, for instance, insist that the child call this new adult dad or mom, but rather work out what that is going to be. Especially if the biological parent is still in the picture, it is just too confusing to a child to have two people in the picture, which they're calling mom and dad, and it's also a lie. It's not the truth that the step parent is mother. There are cases where it works out that stepmothers are called mom, and it's very natural and feels comfortable. I think generally that happens though where a death has occurred, and the biological parent is out of the picture, and that's acceptable to both the adult and the child.
Is there such a thing though as the new person in the relationship assuming much more of a parental responsibility and a parental role, and is it useful to have some distinctive title so that they aren't really pals, buddies, first name basis stuff? They call their teacher Miss So and So, Miss So and So. There's a level of respect in terms of disciplining and authority.
I think that level of respect with the discipline and the authority has to be something that is developed in the relationship rather than through name.
One of the things that I find is that kids in general at this day and age now are calling other adults that aren't teachers by their first name.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're not calling them Mrs. Jones or. And so
this intrigues me, because why don't we call the teachers by their first name?
Well, our kids call their teachers, they still
Ms.
come.
Pat or something.
No, our kids call their teachers Mr. or Ms. or Mrs. But all the other adults in their life, they are calling by their first name.
Is that because the teacher is in loco parentis?
I think it's because the schools demand it.
And that's changing. If I might, just having finished college and having a lot of friends that are educators, that a lot of them are going by first name.
Mm-hmm. Well, our whole society is becoming more and more informal, mm-hmm. just increasingly, all across the board. So even as a pastor, it's
impressive.
Yeah.
Call you by the first name.
I'm reverend to no one, and pastor to a lot of people, but a lot of people just concur.
Okay, so, I concur. And yes, the pastors and the teachers and everybody in a position of working with youth is just, really said, my gosh, and we just talked to one man who's here on campus here, said, I'm finished with counseling and teaching because it's a different thing from when I started 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. The whole culture is, do you concede that that's the best, or do you just do it because everybody does it? Might that even be a contributing factor? I don't know.
Well, the question in the blended family, it seems to me, is how do you express and conduct with authority? That's one of the key issues between the stepchild and the stepparent, is what authority does this person have? It's not as parent. You know, they aren't the biological parent. So what is the authority? And in developing families, we found that it's generally best to have that authority derived from the biological parent. You know, hence, I have authority with her kids because she gives it to me. You know, plus, you know, I have authority as an adult in the situation. You know, it's not parental authority, it is adult authority. Does that make sense at all? Or?
Not completely, because you're still paying the bills. You're the one who's probably going to have to say you must be in by 11 o'clock. So it's not.
Why would he be the one paying?
If she isn't home.
But if.
It's all very nice and ideological, but I can't, you know, what he's saying is very, it's very nice in theory, but I can't give him authority to tell my kids what to do because they could just look at him and go, yeah, so what? I can't give him any authority over them.
But they know that, you know, that if they did that, that they would have to deal with you.
You mean it's a deputized authority?
Yeah,
but
kind of.
But the crux of it all, I find, is that the two adults have to come to a common understanding of how the rules in the house are going to work. And that's where most of the bickering comes, is the two adults are under so much stress from all this other stuff that they have to work out how you're going to fold the towels or whatever those examples where you used hire and eat dinner. Is somebody going to be allowed to chew with their mouth open or you know, that's where I think a lot of the aggravation comes in, is really with the adults, because if they both could follow each other's set upon rules, then I think the kids would come along.
To what extent, though, even, you know, if you're like, and you aren't coming along, but there are times when even though I had parental authority, I didn't have, and you have to earn that, mm-hmm. because a lot of parents who are rightfully parental don't have that response from right. the kids, and that's increasing, you know, by leaps and bounds. So, in a sense, I suppose that the new member of the pair has a profound responsibility to try to earn that relationship.
Yeah, and that gets back to what I had said earlier about the necessity of that new person not being or taking that authority position at the beginning, but rather using the first part of the relationship to build a friendship bond, a relationship, and then once the relationship is built, then that forms the basis for having authority.
And in all of your counseling and working with remarried couples, have you found that to happen?
I haven't seen it happen very often.
That's the point.
In real life, you know, what happens is, I have to go to a church convention for 3 days, and she's left with my daughter, and
whose mother says you don't have to like Barb if you don't want to.
And so about. A day and a half after I leave, it all hits the fan, and then I have to sort it out. When I get back,
it just doesn't often happen that the step parent isn't put in a position of authority. It may just be the typical thing of the man saying, "Oh, now I have a woman here to take care of my kid, and I can go to work at 7 a.m. and you dress this kid." Something, and then we fall into our typical roles of woman taking care of a man, doing this, and there you are. I mean, so it just slides. It happens real gradually. You don't even see it, no matter how much.
I don't know if we have time today, but I think another issue that has to be addressed is what happens if two of a blended family is together, and then out of that that husband and wife, theirs and a child.
Yours, mine, and ours.
I'm sorry?
I said, yours, mine, and ours.